Welcome, everyone, to episode 454 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have more news to discuss. Even though it is the middle of August, free agency is effectively over. Now teams are turning their attention to next year's free agent class and already taking some of the top talent out of the market. So we have Terry Rozier, Robert Williams III, and Josh Richardson have all agreed to extensions. We will discuss all three of those and what it means moving forward for the 2022 free agent class and who might be next in terms of players who might sign extensions. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is a man who I know is super excited about the new Spider-Man trailer, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It is going well. My God, I was psyched. Look, I'm going to say it. I think that might have been the best superhero movie trailer ever of any movie out there, of any superhero movie out there. I think that is the most anticipation building trailer I've ever seen. Because look, I'm not going to go too geeky on this, but the plot points of this movie has been discussed for, 3 years now? And we're finally seeing some of those come to fruition. I'm not going to go into them because that would be a little spoilerish for those who haven't really paid a whole lot of attention. Oh my God. This is the world that this movie is going to open is insane. I am all there. Take my money, Disney. Take all of them. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I didn't watch it when it leaked. Like we had a friend in town from Nashville this past weekend. So I was like offline all of weekend. And then I saw it leaked. I didn't pay any real attention to it. But I watched it last night, and like, I haven't been to a movie theater since the pandemic started. Now, especially with a small child at home, it is increasingly difficult to get out anywhere, but this really might make me break my streak. I think I'm going to have to go.
Yeah, for sure. We have been at the movies here and there. We actually saw Free Guy the other day.
Oh, how's that?
It was really good. High recommend from here. Gave it an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. Nice. Really liked it. It was very original, and it was very wholesome. It had heart. It had personality. It was just, you know, like, I know Ryan Reynolds is in everything these days, and I know some people are saying that it's a little bit much, but you never got that feeling watching Free Guy. You really didn't. Nice. It was very, very good.
Well, that is good to hear. And you know what isn't original, Mort? Is the number of players signing extensions in recent days. This has just become a trend. We're just not going to have free agency next year. Everyone's going to be off the market by the time July 2022 rolls around. We already covered a bunch last episode. Now we have three other ones to discuss. The Boston Celtics have been busy in particular. We'll get to them shortly. But the big one was Terry Rozier signing a 4-year, $97 million extension with the Charlotte Hornets. You know, 2 years ago, this guy signs a 3-year, around $60 million deal, widely panned as one of the worst contracts in free agency. Then he goes out and averages almost 20 points a game, starts shooting over 40% from the field, almost 40% from three over the last two seasons on much higher volume as well.
Then he goes out and starts shooting over 40% of the field. It's just, that's such a low bar to just cross. I love that you led with that.
But, I mean, he had shot 39.5 was his highest over his first four seasons. So that was one of our big gripes with it. We had a bet 2 years ago. Would he shoot 40% of the field? Now, he shot 45 overall last year. Like, Terry Rozier is a much better player now than he was a couple of years ago. So, you know, the 3 years, $60 million, he more than lived up to that. Yes. What do you think of this new value which is about $25 million a year?
So I think, like everyone else, I was a little bit surprised at the number that came out. And I still think it's a substantial amount of money for Terry Rozier. I even wrote an article about the Hornets for Forbes the other day that you can go check out at Forbes. But something struck me after I published that article, Brian, to be fair. And that is, that deal might not age as poorly as many people think. Like when he is in, let me just look it up here. His last year of that deal, he's going to be earning $26.6 million, which is a lot of money. And a lot of people would have a tough time associating Terry Rozier with that kind of money. But at that point in time, the league might have signed a new TV deal. And given that they're looking to triple the amount that they signed for back in 2014, which was a 9-year contract with Turner and Disney. Disney, right? ESPN. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is owned by Disney, of course. That was 9 years, $24 billion. Now they're looking at a framework of $75 billion. And I assume it's over a similar period of time. Which means that the TV deal, the TV revenue, would effectively triple. If that triples, that also means that the salary cap, even if we include cap smoothing in this scenario, Brian, it is going to increase significantly to the point where I just wouldn't be worried about Terry Rozier earning $26-plus million. So if you look at it through that perspective, that's a pretty good investment.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. The numbers you're citing were from Jabari Young of CNBC. Yep. He reported this back in March. He cited one person familiar with sports media deals said the NBA could get $70.2 billion over 9 years, which, again, would about triple what they got in their past TV deal. Of course, the past TV deal is why the cap spiked in 2016 to the extent that it did. Now we're talking about evenly. You know, going from whatever they were earning slightly less than $1 billion to about $2.5 billion. Now, you know, a lot more money is coming into the pot. So as you said, even if they smooth it, we're still talking about a massive, massive increase in the salary cap, you know, in the next few years is certainly on the table. Right now, what, you know, Real GM has projections of the cap going through the 27-28 season. You know, the NBA, when it announced the 21-22 cap, released a updated projection of next year and said the cap's supposed to go up almost $7 million next year alone, which came as a big surprise considering, you know, the kind of the gloom and doom from the pandemic.
Right.
You know, again, after that, it's basically like $6 to $7 million every year. And that is not factoring in the potential of a new CBA, the potential of a new TV contract. So there's a lot of uncertainty that you have to bake in here when you're talking about, you know, contracts that extend to the mid 2020s. But yeah, I mean, you almost have to think that agents should have this in the back of their mind now and should be saying, I don't know, guys, maybe we want to cash in when this windfall hits, if it does. Like maybe we should be trying to become a free agent, you know, after the 24-25 season or after 25-26. But for Rozier, he is. I mean, he is going to be a free agent after the 25-26 season. He'll be 32 at the time, or he'll be, right? Yeah, because he's going into his age 27 season right now. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be signing a max deal or a near max deal, anything like that. You know, he might have 1 or 2 years left of his prime at that point, but good on him for securing the bag. Like I get the hesitation here. And I saw some people saying, you know, who would you rather have, Terry Rozier at $97 million, or would you rather have just kept Devontae Graham at 4 years, $48 million? And I understand that, but I feel like that's underselling how good Terry Rozier has been for the last couple of years. And
he has been good. He has been better. And he is better than Graham, but I also understand that earning twice as much is a big hurdle.
Yeah. But Graham is basically like early years Terry Rozier, where it's like his career high in terms of single season shooting percentage has been 38.2%. Now, a lot of that is because of his shot profile. Most of his shot attempts come from deep. He shoots, you know, he shot 37% from deep over the past 2 years, each of the past 2 years, and he's averaging almost 9 attempts per game. So I understand it's not Devontae Graham is a terrible shooter in general, but you know, neither guy draws a ton of free throws. Like Graham, I would expect if his volume rises in New Orleans, he'll probably average, you know, he averaged 18.2 in 2019-20. Like, I think they just had to kind of hedge a bit and say, which guy do we think is a better fit around LaMelo Ball? Because ultimately, that's all that matters. Like, Charlotte has its franchise cornerstone centerpiece guy in LaMelo. And every decision from here on out has to be, who do we think is the best fit around this guy? And clearly, they think it's Rozier, and not just for next year, in the long term as well.
Well, there might be a secondary angle to this, which I also wrote about, which is, now that Terry Rozier is locked up for effectively 5 years, because the extension isn't going to kick in until after this season, it also makes him presumably a more attractive trade piece. Instead of being one of those guys who are, you know, about to expire, and where it seems just kind of like figuring out, do we want to get him in a trade and then risk losing him, or do we wait until free agency where we might have to outbid a lot of potential suitors? Now that you know what you have, you know that you have him locked up into a long-term deal. So if a team out there is going, you know what, we think Terry Rozier could be the missing piece and we want to trade for him, they can, knowing full well that he's locked up, which means his trade value could also be fairly high moving forward. So I think the Hornets did just something smart here in terms of safeguarding their own future. Like, they can play Rozier and they can get tremendous production. But if they at some point figure out, you know, we need to get a little bit younger around LaMelo, like, because Rozier is 27 and you have Gordon Hayward, who's 31, maybe you want to at some point pivot away from that and get someone who's a little bit more age appropriate next to LaMelo. You can do that. You can definitely move Terry Rozier, and you can, you can also move Gordon Hayward. I don't know how much positive trade value he has, but Rozier should be definitely, should definitely be able to fetch a significant return.
Yeah. And they're in a position now where they're kind of doing what Boston did when they had the two Jays a little bit younger, where they have, you know, Hayward, Rozier, Plumlee are kind of their win now older guys. And Oubre is kind of in the middle of that. But then you also still have LaMelo, Miles Bridges, PJ Washington. We just added James Booknight, Kai Jones. So they have a pretty well-rounded roster. They have some intriguing young guys other than LaMelo. They also have these older veterans who will help them, you know, stay competitive and at least, you know, stay in the mix for a play-in spot. I really like what Charlotte has done in the last couple of years. Like, ever since they got LaMelo, it's been mostly roses for them.
I think it's still fair to question whether they did the right thing with the whole Nicholas Batum wave and stretch thing and then signing Gordon Hayward. Lord knows you are definitely always down to complaining about, you know, what they could have had instead. Well, not the Hornets, but the Celtics instead. But no, but you're right. I think they're off to the right start here. I mean, Miles Bridges, they're going to take care of him, I think, next year, unless they figure out some sort of extension with him now. We haven't seen any developments on that yet, right?
I haven't seen much other than the obvious max guys who got their extensions right away. Right. Like, these, you know, fringe guys tend to happen much closer to the deadline.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we haven't seen anything on him, Jaren Jackson Jr., Michael Porter Jr. So I think, you know, that's probably a conversation to be had toward the end of September, early October.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be shocked if they lock him up. I wouldn't be surprised, because I have a feeling that if they let Bridges hit the restricted free agency market, some team out there is going all in on him. That wouldn't shock me. Just the athleticism, the all-around play, the increasingly solid efficiency, the defensive upside. I just wouldn't risk it if I'm Charlotte. And if you're just handing out this type of contract to Terry Rozier and Gordon Hayward anyway, it kind of tracks that you want to keep your guys and then stay as an above the cap team and operate in that manner as well.
Right. Yeah. They are punting on having cap space next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Let's move to the Boston Celtics, Mort. We talked about them last episode with Marcus Smart's extension. They lock up two more guys completely taking themselves out of the cap space realm next year. So the first of whom was Robert Williams III, agreed to a 4-year, $54 million extension. You know, I tweeted that I thought this was just a smart piece of business for them and got a surprising amount of pushback. Like, people were saying, no, this guy can't stay healthy. What has he done to prove that he's worth this kind of money? So what did you think of this deal?
Well, out of fear of saying that we have the NBA pod hive mind, I agree with you. I don't understand that pushback. Like, okay, I get that there are injury concerns. I'm okay with that argument, honestly. But that's a good price. I mean, for a guy who passes the ball well, we need to talk about this, because to me it seems, and I hate this term, but you catch my drift when I say this. Casual fans, they do not seem to understand at all that Robert Williams can pass the basketball. I'm looking over his stats here. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, you look at Nikola Jokic, you look at the Joakim Noahs of the world back in the day, Vlade Divac, and you go, whoa, center has to basically average 5 assists for him to be a good passer. And, like, Williams doesn't, but that doesn't mean anything. Like, he is a fundamentally sound passer. He takes good shots. I think he's, like, above 70% shooting for his career from the field. Like, he doesn't play outside of his own limitations. He's a very strong shot blocker. He's supremely athletic. He can really influence the game on that end of the floor. Like, what's not to like here? It's a $54 million deal over 4 years. I mean, does that contract even... No, I was about to ask, does that contract even break $15 million a single year? And it doesn't, according to Spotrac.
Yeah, I don't know if they have the actual details, or yeah, it's just an estimate for now, but still, I mean, I don't see how it could.
But it's in that area. We're not talking about something that's in the 20s. That's kind of my point here.
Right. Yeah. I will say Rashawn Williams saw this contract, and if he didn't fire his agent already, he probably said
Rashawn Holmes, you mean?
Oh yeah. Sorry. Rashawn Holmes. Yeah. He was probably not thrilled when he saw that Robert Williams III is making more than him now.
Rashawn Holmes, like, when we do like a free agent loser section at some point,
yeah,
Rashawn is like number one on my list, I think.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's Dennis Schroeder. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's fair. But Rashawn is up there. Like, what the hell happened there?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the one where, if you want to talk about Charlotte, like, not maximizing its opportunities, right, he would be the guy. But clearly they thought otherwise. Toronto, same deal. He just got priced out. And I think a lot of these guys now who are signing these extensions, especially, you know, maybe a Robert Williams sees what happens to Rashawn Holmes and says, I could bet on myself. Like, maybe I stay healthy and maybe I... You know, I've never played more than 18.9 minutes per game in a season so far. Maybe I bump that up to 25. Like, maybe I can play next to Al Horford at times, or I can play. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think he's going to start ahead of Al Horford. Maybe they do. Maybe they start both of these guys together. Either way, let's say he has a career best year. He's still going to be a restricted free agent, which, as we've discussed, tends to cool the market on these guys. Like, Lauri Markkanen is still out here waiting for a team. He thought he was going to get 20 plus million. He's getting nowhere close. No one has that kind of money.
Right.
Josh Hart, you know, signs a 3-year, $38 million deal. It's actually just make believe. It's a 1-year deal with, you know, 2 non-guarantees and a player app. Like, for these guys who are not elite top tier restricted free agents, like, if you're not John Collins, you're not getting paid. Or you're not Lonzo Ball, you're not getting paid. So,
right.
I don't know that anyone is out there next year offering Robert Williams more than the mid-level exception, just because of, right? I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It's just a tough reality, because he's obviously worth more than that, but you're not wrong. Yeah.
Right. And that's, I mean, I think if you have any beef with this from the Celtics perspective, that's the one gripe to take here. It's like, you just have to read the room and realize that these big money contracts aren't coming for these guys. But then again, it only takes one team to screw with your plans. Like maybe you think, okay, we're fine. We don't need to give him this extension. We'll let him become a restricted free agent. We'll see how he gets screwed by the market. And then we're going to get a little bit of a discount here. But if one team comes out, maybe, you know, Toronto comes out next year and has cap space and says, we're going to go all in on Robert Williams. Then it's like, oh, well, all right, Boston, especially having lost Kyrie and Horford for nothing in recent years. And then Hayward too, they get the big trade exception. But, you know, I could see the Celtics just saying, we need to just take care of business now. We can't afford to let this guy hit free agency because the upside definitely justifies the price. Like if Robert Williams stays healthy and continues building on what he has so far, he's going to vastly outplay this contract. He's going to be worth double what they just paid him.
Correct.
So you bake in the injury risk and you bake in the lack of minutes because he's going to be competing with Horford and Enes Kanter. Like they aren't probably going to feature him for 30 plus minutes a game. That's okay. Like he doesn't necessarily need to. He can be in this low minutes role and continue growing and growing and growing. And then, you know, as Tatum and Brown get older as well, he can now be a foundational piece if he does hit his ceiling, just like those two guys are. So, you know, that's what I was saying when I thought the Celtics did a good job here. Like you are paying for the upside, but the size of the contract protects you against most of the risk here. Like I don't think it's a terrible value. It's really just, if you look at it relative to Rashawn Holmes, maybe it is.
This could have been $60 million for 4 years and I still wouldn't have blinked. It's fine. It's completely fine. And also because, like you said, it takes them out of that whole restricted free agency game. You don't have to waste time ankling around with all that. And that, which again, leans itself to the article I wrote for Forbes some time ago. Just stay out of the RFA game. Like, just stay out of it. And the Celtics right now are doing that with Williams. Like, they're just saying, we don't want to have that headache. It doesn't even matter if he doesn't necessarily perform right away. This is a move for the future. Like the extension isn't even going to kick in until after this year anyway. Mm-hmm. So if teams have an opportunity to extend their guys to these type of contracts, which also makes them tradable, by the way, very tradable.
Yeah.
Go for it. Like there's no harm in doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this guy blocked 9 freaking shots in the playoff game this year.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's started slow and he's inconsistent, the health concern. I get all of that. But the upside justifies the risk here, I think.
Can I give you his per 36 minutes or per 36 numbers?
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 1.8 blocks in 18.9 minutes a game. So anyone who's quick on their feet can probably figure that one out.
3.3 blocks per game. 1.6 steals, 3.4 assists, 13.1 rebounds, and 15.2 points per game. And I granted, for per 36 doesn't mean that he'll average that if given 36 minutes, but it does mean that he is productive. And yes, I understand that some fans are going to point out, has he been healthy? And no, he hasn't played a fully healthy season, but he did crack 52 games this year, which is a drastic improvement. So I'm just not that worried. It's not like he's had some major injuries that prevent him from ever being healthy. We're not talking about, you know, Andrew Bynum out here. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not. We're talking about some unfortunate nagging injuries here and there. Like, you can get those things settled. You just need a proper training staff and a new diet and all these things. And like sometimes it's just bad luck. That happens. I am fully willing to gamble on Time Lord. I have no reason not to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, imagine if, like, I'm not saying Robert Williams is the second coming of Joel Embiid, but imagine if the Sixers, like, you know, Joel Embiid misses his first two seasons, played, I think, 31 games his third year. Like, no, we're not going to extend you because we don't, you know, like, they extended him and he turns into an MVP candidate. Now, again, not saying Robert Williams is going to follow that trajectory. I don't think even in the best case scenario, is going to develop into a top five player in the league, but could he develop into a top 10 center? Top eight, top seven? Yes. Why not?
Yep.
And at that, like, again, at that price point, who would you rather have? I guess this is a good way to frame it.
All right. Hit me.
Robert Williams at 4 years, $54 million. Mm. Or Jared Allen at 5 years, $100 million.
Time Lord.
It's at least close, right?
Yeah, it is. Like, that is, I mean, I'm going with Time Lord here because I feel as though, even though Jared Allen has proven to be more healthy, I do think there is more upside in Williams than there is Allen. And the fact that I would be paying him significantly less money, which opens up so much more financial flexibility for me. Yeah, I'm going with Time Lord. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can understand the pushback if you're talking about the health and you're talking about who's going to give him this money in free agency next year, because maybe no one does, but
right,
maybe someone does. And you do have to live, like, you have to weigh the risk and reward of giving him this money despite the injury history, knowing that one team could just screw you up entirely. And now, I mean, with all these teams handing out extensions, the 2022 free agent class is looking weaker by the day. So anyone who does hit the market, you know, for the teams that have cap space, it's going to be very slim pickings.
Yeah.
And maybe that causes them to go after a Robert Williams in restricted free agency, because they don't have to save them. Maybe that's the point. They don't have to save their money for unrestricted free agency because there's no one of realistic interest to them for the teams not in Beal, you know, in the bidding for Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine. Maybe that's all right. We're going for Robert Williams right away. And hopefully they're a little more clandestine than the Bulls were with Lonzo Ball. But, you know, teams clearly discuss with restricted free agents ahead of the moratorium and, you know, could reach deals with these guys right away. And that's going to put Boston into a tricky spot had they not just given him this extension now. So I don't know. Of their recent moves, this is the one I probably have the least qualms about.
Yeah, agreed. So let's get to the other one.
Yeah, so this one just came out last night. Sham Charania reported Josh Richardson, like the way he framed it, he said it was like a new two-year, $24 million deal. It's a one-year extension, and he's earning about $11.6 million this year, so it's presumably around $12.5 million. For next year. So
right.
I saw you. It seems like you were a fan of this one as well, on Twitter at least. So give us your extended thoughts on Josh Richardson.
Well, I mean, fan. I think it's fine. I don't think he's ever going to be the player that we all thought he would be. Because if he was, he'd be a $20 million per year player. And he's not. Mm-hmm. Like, he gives you size. He gives you a little bit of ball handling. He gives you some shooting when he's on, I guess. He gives you some defense, but more than anything, Brian, it's just not that costly. I mean, again, the cap is going up. It's fine for a rotational player who's going to get like 25, 30 minutes per game. And at the same time, it also works as a trade chip. This is a guy who can come in as a salary filler in a larger trade if that somehow is a viable option for the Celtics to make external upgrades. So I just like the overall flexibility that it gives them. It's not that I think that, you know, Josh Richardson at this contract is some major steal or anything. I think he's somewhat fairly compensated, and that's it. I don't expect him to come onto the Celtics team and take a sudden leap or anything. I just think planning ahead, it's decent value if you keep him, and it's decent value for a salary filler if that's the route you're taking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about conceptual 3-and-D guys, and I say conceptual because he does not provide the 3-point percentage that you would hope from a 3-and-D guy. He had the outlier season in Miami, you know, 3 years ago at this point, where he shot almost 38. It has dipped every single year since. He was down to 33.0 last year, despite playing next to Luka Doncic. So, you know, he's more of a, he can hit that shot, but he's not a major threat from beyond the arc. He's a solid defender. You know, you can't, he's more of a, like, I put him more on off guards than like point of attack is not his strong suit.
Right.
Which is where the Sixers erred with him. But you know, just like a steady role player, and those guys do have value. We just saw Danny Green get a 2-year, $20 million deal, you know, in that same vein. And I'm looking at the free agent class next year, and there just really aren't, there's no one of that archetype. It's like Robert Covington is there, but he's, you know, more of a forward, like a small forward, power forward type than a guard. We have Gary Harris, who, if he can stay healthy, fits that archetype even better than Josh Richardson does. But if he can stay healthy, is just an elephant sized qualifier for Gary Harris. We just haven't, you know, we haven't seen it for a couple years now. Like the Gary Harris we thought we were getting in 2017, 2018, that player might just be gone.
Yeah. I think the potential he had, I think that's broken down now. I mean, it's going to be a different iteration of Gary Harris moving forward, for sure.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's already 26. He's turning 27 in the middle of September. Like, either way, it's those two guys are basically at the top of the, you know, 3-and-D guard class from what I can see. Like, Jeremy Lamb, you know, Iggy, like a 38-year-old.
Well, Iggy gives you Beverly. Does Iggy even give you 3-point shooting at this point? He doesn't really. He never really did. And I wonder if he even gives you a whole lot of defense anymore. Like, he can still turn on and off here and there, but overall, I definitely saw some lapses from him last year. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's this market is completely bit, like, I guess Bruce Brown Jr.
Yeah.
But, you know, is he a 3-and-D guard, or is he a 3-and-D center in a 6-foot-4 person's body? You know, like, there will be some guys in the restricted free agent market if, like, Mikal Bridges hits, you know. But either way, like, there just is not a ton of talent with this kind of upside, even though, you know, again, Josh Richardson, if you're relying on him as, like, a top two, top three scoring option, you're probably not going to be a great team. But the Celtics don't have to worry about that. And, you know, I continue to think the Celtics are just, especially after getting Dennis Schroeder, who's going to fit in really well in that six-man unit, you know, having him and Pritchard off the bench, you have Smart, Richardson, the Jays, Horford, you have Robert Williams locked up now. Like, all of these guys are talented, are going to go into the season feeling financially secure. Like, they don't have to go gunning because they're hunting for their next contract.
Right.
Which could have been a real problem, especially with the three guys who they extended. Like, if Smart, Richardson, and Williams are all going in thinking, like, oh, crap, I'm going into a contract year. Like, this season's just about me. Just give me the ball, I'm putting it up every time I touch it. But that could have derailed things. But now all of them are at least set through the 22-23 season.
Right.
I don't know, man. Like, I think the Celtics, I keep seeing them in the conversation way below Milwaukee and Boston, but even below, like, Philly, Miami, Atlanta. That
Boston is below Boston?
Oh, bottom Milwaukee and Brooklyn, whatever. And then, yeah, Philly, Atlanta, Miami. But, like, I think they're right in that. It would not even remotely surprise me if they're the number three seed in the East by the end of the year.
I mean, I hear you. I do. And I'm not necessarily low on Boston. I could just see a scenario wherein they also fall through a little bit. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if, for example, Dennis Schroeder, who you just brought up, goes shot crazy.
Yeah, he is the one guy who is looking for a contract. That's fair.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, is Aaron Nesmith ready? If he is, I think, and this sounds like me being a little bit weird here, but I think those the margin players play just a crucial bit for Boston's success this year. Like, if Aaron Nesmith isn't going to develop this year, but it waits a year, I could see that having a huge effect on what they're ending up as this season, because they just need some production from him. The depth isn't that fantastic. I understand where you're coming from. I really do. but like, do I trust Chris Dunn to come in and play, you know, a lot of minutes, for example? I don't. Like, he missed all of, more or less all of last year. Like, he's not an offensive player. It's very clear that he's just a defender and nothing else. Like, Josh Richardson declined even further. We don't know. I mean, that's in the cards, right? Marcus Smart's three-point shooting, which always seems like a mixed bag, even though it has gotten a lot better in recent years. Who knows if that kind of drops off a little bit? I get what you're saying, and you're taking the optimistic view, so I want to do that too. I think every team, we should try to look at it optimistically, but I also just see a laundry list of things that if they go wrong, just a few of them, it could be a tough season for them. Not like missing the playoffs kind of tough necessarily, but I think top three is probably like their ceiling instead of an expectation.
Oh, no, I don't think Milwaukee and Brooklyn are so far ahead of anyone else, I think.
Right.
Every other team we discuss in the East, you know, realistic best case scenario, probably number three, maybe Miami or Philly, you could talk me into being a top two seed. But, like, that's relying on injuries. If everyone stays healthy, Milwaukee and Brooklyn are well ahead. And Boston, I can understand the concerns, especially if you're starting Smart and Richardson, which it sounds like they are. The playmaking is going to be the absolute biggest question for this team. Like, do they have enough guys who can create a shot for themselves and for their teammates? Themselves, I think they do.
Yeah, I was about to say the two chase have that in the back.
Right. But can those guys create for others? Can Smart create for others? Like, will they just run their offense through Horford as like poor man's old Jokic? I don't think so, but I think the two J's are going to have to develop as playmakers, which they have. I like what they have done defensively, especially. I feel like they're just going to be completely interchangeable 1-4 with Smart, Richardson, and the J's. And I think they have the potential, especially with, you know, I guess however many cancer minutes they have, this could tank their defensive rating. But otherwise, with Horford and Williams manning the middle, like, they're going to be they have top five defensive rating upside to me.
They do. They absolutely do. And I just wonder if that's enough. I think the playmaking issues are real. And I say that fully recognizing that Marcus Smart got a lot better last year as a passer and as a playmaker. Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed like he read the floor in a capacity he never did before. So I'm taking that into consideration. But, like, when the ball goes through the hands of Dennis Schroeder, I have no faith. No faith whatsoever, especially after that contract. So you're right. I mean, this is Jalen and this is Jason. Those two guys are going to have the ball in their hands and they're going to have to make decisions. And that includes finding the open man, moving the basketball, do all those extra bits. But I'm not betting against them because so far they have done seemingly everything that the broader NBA community has asked of them and more.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's go into what's next, basically, because we've now seen a number of guys sign extensions who aren't in that obvious, you know, max. Like, Kevin Durant signs an extension. Of course he does. The Nets would pay him twice as much if they could. But now, you know, seeing Smart, seeing Richardson, seeing Rozier, seeing Time Lord, that's more surprising. We don't typically see this volume of, you know, non-max veteran extensions in one off season.
Right.
So do you think this is a trend or is this just a one-off? Do you think, like, are these guys looking at what happened to Dennis Schroeder and to Rashawn Holmes? Maybe all these Boston guys have one phone call with Dennis Schroeder and he's like, take the damn money. And then, you know, that's why they locked up all their guys. Or do you think this is just like a weird year and, you know, come 2023, we're going to see a robust free agent class again?
You know, I think the allure of being chased has worn off. You know, I remember back 20 years ago where NBA stars would almost be excited about someone come knocking at their door at midnight. Like, who is it? Who's the team changing me? And like, sometimes you had stories about several teams showing up at the same address at the same time, making everything super awkward. And there was this whole ideology that players love to be chased. They love to be the attraction of teams. I think that moment has passed. I think now we're in a situation where players just don't care. They know that if they're good enough, they can go wherever the hell they want to, and that they don't need certain teams to chase them. Like, for example, if you're a Paul George and you say, I want to get out of the Los Angeles Clippers and I want to go specifically to, let's say, Memphis, for example, like, are you going to tell me that he's not going to get his wish? I don't think so. He's going to get his wish somehow, some way, because then he'll just tell everyone else, yeah, you can trade for me, but I won't report. I won't do this. I won't do that. I'll speak out in the media. Like, I'm just going to force my way to Memphis if that's what I want. And I think we're seeing that with contracts now, where teams or players are basically saying, you know what, screw all that. We just want to sign for some guaranteed money. We want to lock some things up. And if we want to move on, we can just make it happen. It's a phone call away from my agent. I'm going to call up my agent and I'm going to say, I know that I have 3 years left. Don't care. Get me out of Dodge. So I think that's the new mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm wondering if the money now is just so high that players, you know, Terry Rozier are going to get $97 million. Right. Like, you know, at a certain point, sure, you could bet on yourself. You could try to make even more money, but like, That's going to set not only you up, not only your children up, your grandchildren, that could support your entire community. Like that, that's your entire extended family. Like that is generational wealth.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if we've reached a point where these contracts are so big that, you know, players are okay. They like, holy crap, you're giving me 15, $20 million a year. $25 million a year. Like, yeah, I'm just going to take that. I don't need to gamble and, you know, milk out every single last drop of my earning potential. Like, $100 billion is cool with me. I'm good.
Yeah. No, for sure.
I don't know.
I think you're right. I mean, I think for some guys, it's not. Like, you alluded to it. Like, for example, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, those type of guys. Like, they are going to want the max next year. Well, does Beal have an option for next year? So he could be looking at, right? Yeah. Okay. So he could opt out next year. Yeah. So they're going to be looking at that. They want the full Monty, so to speak. And I get that. But for the mid-tier guys, you know, the ones who aren't full-fledged max contract players, they get offered, you know, money that are, like you said, generational. Yeah, you lock that up immediately. Like, for example, Terry Rozier, if he goes down with an injury, and knock on wood, that doesn't happen, but fortunately now he's got his contract. Mm-hmm. He's not a player the NBA would necessarily pick up, if you catch my drift. Like, if he goes down with a horrific, horrific injury, teams would be, all right, Terry Rozier was a good player, but we're not willing to make the investment like the Nets did with Kevin Durant. Like, he doesn't have the name recognition. He doesn't have the star quality. Like, we'll have to see some other team pick him up, and he'll have to prove that he can play at an NBA level again before we're even remotely interested again. So for those guys, there's a greater risk. The max guys, like, they're going to get their money regardless of what kind of injury. Like, look, LeBron James could fall over tomorrow and break into half, and the Lakers would still give him every single dollar that they could afford to. And that's just what it is. So yeah, for the non-max guys, it's absolutely something that they are prioritizing. I would be shocked otherwise. I mean, get the bag, lock it up, and then you can go from there. It's just a smart play. It's also why I'm kind of curious as to that mentality. You actually brought it up a little bit earlier, Brian, that whole, you know, betting on yourself in restricted free agency. Mm-hmm. Like, So Lauri Markkanen, you brought him up as well. Let's take him as an example, right? Yeah. He wanted 19. The Bulls offered 15 before the start of his fourth season.
Oof.
How much do you think that he wants to go back and accept that deal right now?
Yeah, or Schroeder. Right? I mean, he turns out 4 years, $484 million.
Yeah, $484.
and settles for 1 year, 5.9.
Like right, but Schroeder wasn't a restricted free agent though.
No.
So I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying like even from the because he had his first big hit, like he was still earning a significant portion of money before that. And I'm not saying the rookies are poor because they're still earning millions and millions of dollars, but there's a difference. Like Lauri Markkanen has not had what you call his first big hit yet, like his secondary contract. And now it appears as though that second hit is going to be substantially lower than what he could have had if he didn't pass up the extension. And as we know with the NBA, if you're kind of stuck in a certain mindset, your value is not going to increase from there. So his third hit, when that arrives, is probably not going to be all that great, meaning that Markkanen is going to have cost himself at the end of the day just a shitload of money, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, I mean, for every John Collins, he turns down 4 years, $90 million before the start of last season, ends up getting 5 year, $125 million.
I still don't agree with that, but yeah.
Yeah, but there's a Markkanen, or like Nerlens Noel, who turned down 4 years, $70 million from the Mavericks a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one too.
He had to settle for minimum contracts for a couple years in a row before finally he gets 3 years, $27 million this year. But even that has a team option at the end. So, you know, it's basically a 2 year, $18 million contract effectively.
Yeah.
But I mean, he had to settle for, I think he did the qualifying offer, I want to say, from the Mavericks, and then two minimum deals with the Thunder, I believe. And then finally gets $5 million last year with the Knicks. And then, you know,
I don't remember if he ever took the qualifying offer. He could have been. He could have. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean,
I think that's
the issue, right? Like, that's the issue. Like, with guys waiting, like, why not just take the money? I mean, I understand you're kind of hoping that, oh, well, you know what? I've been in the league for 3 years. Maybe in year four, that's when I become LeBron James. Like, no, you're not. If you've been in the league for 3 years, you've played consistent minutes and you've had a consistent role and you haven't turned into LeBron James or anything that remotely sniffs a max caliber performance, like you're not hitting that unless you're Jimmy Butler. Like, you're not getting to that level. Like, the Jimmy Butlers aren't the blueprint here. Those are the exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, you might have to negotiate a little bit harder. Like, for marketing, instead of saying I want 19 and the Bulls offering 15, like, okay, see if you can hedge your bet a little bit, go 17, there you go. What's that over 4 years? 17, 44, that's $68 million over 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of money. That's also generational wealth. Like, just take the bag, figure it out afterwards. Take it. It's so much easier.
Well, so here you brought up like the middle tier, like, which just is getting thinner and thinner and thinner every year. There's the max guys, there's the MLE guys, and then there's that middle group. Let's say between 15 and 20 million. Here is the full list of guys who got contracts worth an average of $15 and $20 million in free agency this year. It is not long.
All right.
It is Tim Hardaway Jr.,
right?
Evan Fournier, Norman Powell, Spencer Dinwiddie, Duncan Robinson, Gary Trent Jr. That's it. Six guys.
Wow.
So if you, you know, if you aren't a clear-cut max guy and you want to be in this middle tier, you know, say I'm eyeing 20 to 25 million per year, which is apparently what Schroeder was as well. Those contracts just don't exist anymore. Right. Not in high volume. I mean, Jared Allen got 20 million, Lonzo got 20 million, you know, John Collins gets 25, Mike Conley got 23 almost. Other than that, like, it was Derrick Rose at 14.5, Doug McDermott at 14. Josh Hart, again, on the fake three-year, $38 million. Kelly Oubre, 2 years, $25 million. Like, a guy like Kelly Oubre a couple years ago probably was in that same camp where he thought, oh, I'm gonna hit free agency. I'm going to get $20, $25 million a year easily. Yeah. Now he's getting 25 over two, and the second year isn't fully guaranteed.
Right.
So, I do wonder if we've reached a point now where there's just – the monetary figures are so big that, you know, you have to just see how teams are building right now. Like, most teams are just following two or three max guys at the top MLE or below after that, like a Stars and Scrubs roster construction. And, you know, that's a fantasy term. I'm not saying every other player who isn't a max is a scrub, but like you're just devoting so much of your salary cap to your top two or three guys that you just don't have a ton of money left over for right. these middle tier contracts. And, you know, you get squeezed out if you are in that tier of player. But, you know, going back to Boston for a second, as you said, like all of these contracts that they have now, they like as teams don't have as many of these middle tier contracts, like the teams that do are going to be the most popular potential trade destinations because now you have the salaries to play around and cobble together. Like Indiana has a bunch of those guys in that, you know, 15 to 20 million range. Like it, you could put together a couple contracts for superstars or, you know, mess around and get involved in three team deals to help thing grease some wheels elsewhere. So yeah, I mean, I agree with, you know, what you said earlier about Rogier in particular, like getting him signed to that deal with that length theoretically increases his trade value, even if it might've been a slight overpay for him just based on his value versus production right now.
Overpay right now, because that's right, the thing, right. right? As the cap increases, overpay becomes a relative term.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let's kind of stick with this, even though we're going into a little bit of a new segment here, because I want to bring this up, and I think it's so related to what we're talking about. I want to go back and talk about Isaiah Thomas. Not the yes. Detroit Pistons yeah. version, but the Boston Celtics version.
Yeah.
Like, that's a guy who, if memory serves, so you might help me out here.
Okay.
He was eligible for extension, right? But he just stuck with his contract because he wanted to get the full Brink truck or whatever he called it.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact. I remember the Brinks truck.
Right.
Where, yeah, I mean, he was in line for, you know,
a 100 plus 100
million. Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So and I have the numbers here. He was at 7 points. He was on a declining deal. 7.2 million, 6.9, 6.5, then 6.2. And his final year was on that contract was with the Lakers. So okay. I believe that he got traded, you know, on his last year before free agency, because the Boston Celtics kind of realized, this hip is really problematic.
Well, they traded him to Cleveland first and then.
Correct. Who then traded. Yeah. But I'm saying that last season was 2017, 2018.
Yep.
And that's when he was on his last high paid. I'm putting that in quotation marks salary year. Right. Mm-hmm. And So I have a couple things about this. First and foremost, I'm fairly sure that after year three of that, which was the last one there, he was eligible for an extension. And I'm fairly sure, even though that the Boston Celtics knew that hip could have been an issue, that they would have been open to taking on him on a new contract, even if it had like. It had been a pay increase of the contract he was on, but not necessarily $100 million. Like the reason they moved him was they saw, all right, he's never going to be that max tier guy. But would they have accepted a return for him if he was willing to take like $14 million a year?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an interesting discussion to have, because if they were, he probably wouldn't have been moved. But he kind of said all the while, like, no, I want the whole enchilada. Like, I want the big thing. I want everything. Knowing full well that there was a significant hip injury in place. So I'm of two minds here. Like, what should happen in that scenario? Should the Celtics just go, no, let's hash it out. Like, you deserve a raise because you clearly outproduce your salary. And we're willing to give you, like, $14 million a year, maybe $15 million a year, but we can't go to like 25, 26 that you want because that hip is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or like what should have been the play here? That's kind of what I'm wondering. Should they have gone that route, or did they just do flat out the right thing by saying, nah, we can see the writing on the wall here. Like your hip is not getting better. There's absolutely no reason for us to invest $100 million into you, knowing full well that hip is an issue. Because I'm seeing a lot of these things where Boston is still suffering from like the perception of what happened. Like Anthony Davis's father, I believe it was like, nope, after that happened with IT, you know, Davis is just not coming to to Boston. So in your opinion, what should have been like, who did IT wrong, or did anyone do IT wrong? That's kind of what I want to ask, because I don't think anyone did IT wrong.
I would have to go back and look at the specifics, because I don't remember if the Celtics had cap space that offseason. I think they did, right? Because that's the year they got Horford.
So that would have, they traded him in 17, right?
Yes. Yeah. I believe so.
Let's see.
Yeah.
They traded him.
Oh, so maybe they got Horford the year before.
They traded him on August 30th, 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did they get Horford? They got Horford the year before, didn't they? Yeah, they did.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have had a lot of cap space.
I mean, my question, I'm asking that because I think potentially the one Hindu who did him wrong was the NBA and the NBA Players Union for agreeing to a CBA that has a very restrictive rule on extensions. Like, if they didn't have cap space, which, you know, we talked about the Bulls could have like renegotiated and extended Zach LaVine in the summer if they had cap space. So if they had cap space and that was an option, that's one thing. If they didn't, they were limited to either 120% of his current salary, which was, you know, $7 million a year, or 120% of the average salary. And I don't know what the average salary was offhand for that season, but probably not much more than that. So
it wouldn't have been 175%.
That's an early bird.
Yeah, but he was on a contract for at least 2 years.
Yeah, it's just, no, the salary, I have Kuhn's FAQ pulled up because I knew we'd be talking about it. Yeah, so it's the salary in the first year of a veteran extension may be any amount up to 120% of the player's previous salary or 120% of the estimated average salary. So either way, he's not making more than $10 million a year. And of course he's going to turn that down. He just might not have had the option to sign the extension that he deserved. Maybe the Celtics weren't going to give him a max deal, but maybe they would have been open to giving him 20 million more or whatever. Yeah. So,
hip.
right. But fine. Like, maybe they would have done 5 years, 75. You know, like, who knows? But I wonder if he even had the option of doing so. Or,
I mean, they could have made that happen, though, right?
If they created cap space to do it.
But what, like, I don't remember if they were that locked up. Like, they didn't have a whole lot of players.
I don't remember either. It looks like I have an article pulled up from Chris Forsberg, then of ESPN. This is from May of 2017. He says he's happy that, you know, he's fine if they wanted to bring in free agents over prioritize an extension for him. So it seems like they might have had cap space. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's when they got Hayward, right?
Yes.
2017 is when they got Hayward. Yeah. So yeah.
That is true.
They could have. Yeah. They could have gotten him. They could have extended Isaiah, but instead they spent their cap space on Hayward.
Right.
Yeah.
But even if they dug into it a little bit, I'm not saying much. I'm saying like $15 million a year. I'm not even going to the 20 mark. Mm-hmm. That would still have been such an uptick over what he was earning first and foremost. And I realized that, he wasn't taking that because I just came off a year averaging 29 per game. Like, I get that. But at the same time, you as a player, you like have to understand that if there's a hip injury in place, surely you would recognize that's going to limit your value. Like, there's a reason he's been bouncing around the league ever since. No one has been willing to take on a long-term, like, you know, commitment with him at any point. And yet we're seeing all these videos come out, like the league gave up on me. Like, did they really? Or was it just because that you have a hip injury that just really prevents teams from going all out and giving you that brink truck that you want?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the case. Clearly, like, you know, it's unfortunate that, the timing is unfortunate. I feel like of all of the cautionary contract tales from the past 10 years or so, the guys that we'll think back on the most are DeMarcus Cousins and Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
Because both guys.
Boogie got his bag once, right?
Yeah, but he was up for another. I mean, he was up for the Supermax and then they.
Oh, that's true.
Pelicans. Yeah. So, like, he did not get his you know, that big third contract that he seems, right. you know, as a multi-time All-Star, seemed like he was well in line for. And then IT as well, you know, has
right.
the massive, you know, 29 points per game season. Seems like he's going to get just paid out the wazoo and then, you know, just falls off a cliff after that. So,
and that's the thing, like, because they traded him after that season, they knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, if the Celtics had, like, you know, and I don't want to rule out that the Celtics had been open to bringing him back, but like, let's say we go with the 120%, right? This is kind of what I'm alluding to with players right now. Sign if you're like right there. Yeah. Isaiah Thomas, you wouldn't get the max because you have a hip injury. So kick it back with your team, figure it out and go, look, we're not going to hit anything on the open market. Like, teams are just too scared of a hip injury. The Celtics are offering 120% of the $6.2 million I was earning. Mm-hmm. That's still more than I was earning before. And if that's a four-year contract, why the hell not?
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, again, it comes back to, is the money now so good that,
right.
you know, with Isaiah Thomas being on a $7 million a year contract, if you're going 120% of that, you know, I could understand why he would say, even if I'm not getting maxed, I'm at least getting more than that on the free agent market without mm-hmm. obviously knowing how bad his hip was going to be.
Right.
But now there are guys like, if you're on a $10, $15 million contract and you can get 120% of that, just take that. Like, that is a lot of money now. Like, I think this is going to raise the floor for some guys and perhaps make extensions more of a realistic prospect, because guys now see that mid-tier just doesn't really exist outside right. of a few very limited circumstances.
All I'm saying is this year from the New Orleans Pelicans, he earned $159,000.
For only three games of work. Not bad.
No, but compared to what he could have had, man, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love for that to be my annual salary. That's
right.
But I'm just saying that I think you raised the point of the money being so large now that, now's the time, I think, if you're a player who's putting up huge stats, but there are super injury concerns around you, but you still maybe have some options, take them, because the league will absolutely pivot on to someone more healthy.
Yeah. So I want to wrap up with looking ahead to 2022 now, because as I mentioned, I'm assuming Harden and Irving are going to sign extensions or pick up their player option, whatever. I'm assuming they're not going to be on the market. Beal and Zach LaVine are going to be the two big prizes if they don't sign extensions. LaVine can't now because the Bulls don't have cap space. Beal, we'll see.
Well, other he can, that, right? But they, does not, he's just yeah, not in a renegotiating extent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah. again, because the NBA's extension rules are stupid.
Yes.
He's limited to 120%. He's, you know, he's clearly deserving more than that. He's not signing an extension. So,
right, correct.
Those are the big names. I don't want to focus on these max guys. I don't want to focus on, you know, guys who.
Oh, I know who you want to focus on. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm looking at the list right now. Yeah.
Guys who are going to sign extensions, like, you know, whatever, coming off of rookie scale deals, that we'll figure those guys out later. But who are in this, you know, this tier of veterans who could be free agents next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Who might be good candidates for extensions between now and then.
I mean, looking at the list, there's a couple names that just jumps out at you. First and foremost being Aaron Gordon, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's a tough one. Like, I could see that situation playing out a little bit more difficult, maybe. Like, how do you gauge his value because of his role and everything? Like, when he arrived in Denver, he was, like, super low usage. How much are you willing to pay for that? Like, do you want him to play a bigger role in the offense? Like, what is the plans for him moving forward? Because you want to compensate him for the role that he's going to play. Mm-hmm. So that's one name. So who else? Like, Daddy is young. He's going to be an UFA at that point as well. He's old, though. He'll take less. Jonas Valanciunas is interesting. He's another guy, right? like who could just really be. He's gonna be. Is he 30 or is he? He's right around there. I feel like.
Yeah.
29, 30, somewhere along those lines.
Ooh, Basketball Reference updated their pages for the 21-2 season. Here we go. He's turning 30 in May.
Ah, okay. So he's 29. All right. So you lock him in. This is similar to Aaron Gordon, by the way. You lock him in for the physical prime years, I would say. Like maybe not a four-year deal. But he's going to be interesting because he's still more or less an old school center, but he's just so productive. He's so productive. So it really depends on how he plays in New Orleans, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know what the value is. Like, that's super difficult to say. I think he even signed for less than he should have back in the day.
Right.
But again, this goes back to the whole thing, right? Take the money. It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Valanciunas is interesting because I wonder if the Pelicans' experience with, trading for Steven Adams and then giving him an extension right away and having that backfire, if that makes him a little gun-shy here.
Well, I mean, Valanciunas is better.
Right. I'm not saying it should, but I do wonder if that's going to factor into the calculus here for them at all.
It might, because Sion, I don't think necessarily is someone who automatically plays nice with big interior guys.
Right. Right. Like, would you rather see how he fits with Zion before giving him that money?
I probably would. I mean, as much as I love Jonas Valanciunas and as much as I love the idea of New Orleans spending all of next year staggering Zion with Jonas so they can dunk and lay up on people all game long, which would be tremendous. I just wonder if they're going to get full bang for the buck, having that duo. Ironically, I think it's a guy like Lauri Markkanen, even though he can't play center, that kind of fits more so next to Sion.
Or Miles Turner, even though Mason Ginsburg will be mad at us for saying
that's, that's a lot better, actually. Miles Turner would be interesting. Why would Mason be against a Miles Turner Sion front line?
I feel like Mason thinks of Miles Turner like we do Josh Richardson, where the concept of him is better than the actual player. And to some extent, that is true.
That is true. But at the same time, let's agree that from a playing style perspective, he absolutely aligns with Sion far more. He's a shot blocker on the defensive end, actually a DPOY candidate, if we're being honest. Yeah. And then he can splash threes and be more of an opportunistic dunker on the offensive end. Like, what's not to love with that?
You're not going to run post plays for him as much as you're going to have to for Valanciunas. Yeah, I agree. But I'm telling you, Mason's going to listen to this podcast and be mad at both of us for a week.
Well, you know what? I'm okay with that, Mason, because this is where you're wrong, buddy.
No, but I agree. Valanciunas is one of the guys who stuck out to me when I was just looking over the list.
Right.
Aaron Gordon, I think they're tricky just because you also have to deal with Michael Porter Jr. this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, can you afford to have Jokic, who's going to be up for a supermax,
and Murray
starting in 2023. Murray, who's on a max deal already. Porter probably wants a max or a near max. And then I don't think Gordon's getting a max. He can only get, again, 120%, but that's, a four-year $88.2 million contract, if I did that math correctly. He's coming off 4 years 80 right now.
Right.
And this is where his descending salary actually kind of screwed him over a little bit. Because
that was the same with IT. That was the same with Thomas.
Yep. Like if he had the ascending, he could base his next contract off the $21.6 million they started with instead of $16.4 that he's earning this year. But still, 4 years, $88 million, that's, a ton of money. Like, maybe that's just enough for him, knowing he's going to be at best the fourth option on that team.
Right.
So, yeah, those are the two guys who jumped out right away. I agree. Otherwise, it is slim picking. Like, Thad is so valuable to what the Bulls are doing. But, unless he's willing to settle for a team-friendly deal, I don't think.
I mean, he's not with the Bulls anymore.
Oh, that's right.
He's in San Antonio.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's not signing an extension there.
TJ Warren is another name.
Yeah, but he's earning too little this year.
Oh yeah, he's only at 11. Yeah. Well, near 12 if we're being specific. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If he was earning more. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Looks like
he's
at 12.7 this year. He's not taken.
No, you're right. That is a little bit too low. I took the injury into consideration, but you know what? He was just too damn good before that injury.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. Robert Covington, then?
Yeah, I mean, this is again where like this lack of mid-tier contract is really hurting because mm-hmm. it's like Covington's a good, Covington's a good option. He's at 11 point. No, what's he at? What's his average value? He's at 12 point, almost 13 million this year. So that one I think is reasonable. If you're, starting at about, let's see, it'd be 0.2, would be at 15.5 as your starting salary. And then
he would need to have a better year.
Yeah. Maybe like 4 years, I think 58 million.
Right.
That's not bad.
Again, he would need to have a better year.
Yeah.
Even so, it's in the ballpark, right?
15.5 is right. I did the overall value wrong. The overall value would be almost 70 million.
Oh, because it's 4 years?
I based it off of his current salary rather than the next year.
Oh, I got you. All right.
Yeah,
but here's the thing. He would need to play better. Like, what is the value as attached to him right now based on his performance from last season?
Oof. I mean,
right?
If Oubre got 12.5, not fully guaranteed. Danny Green got 10, not fully guaranteed. I mean, MLE is going to be projected to be 10.1 million next year. Probably right around there, maybe a little bit more, but low teens, I would think.
Mm-hmm. The idea of Robert Covington was that he's a 3-and-D guy who can contribute offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he made 2.9 field goals per game in 32 minutes. Very afraid that offensive game of his is going to go icky on his ass.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he actually hit threes at a career best rate, 37.9%. And
Devontae Graham was low though.
Yeah, right. But it's like his overall shooting percentage was low because he took such a high volume of his shot attempts from three.
Yeah.
But yes, the volume is not great. And that Portland team in general was just such a disappointment.
Yeah.
He would be a fair one, but I don't think they can extend him without knowing what's up with Dame.
Yeah, that's a fair one. That's a fair one.
So,
and that applies for Yusuf Nurkic as well. Then,
right. Yeah. So, I think if you're looking at, who might we cover in the next 2 months in an extension episode, Aaron Gordon, Jonas Valanciunas are probably the best bets. Like Joe Ingles, maybe. But it sounds like the Jazz were shopping him earlier this year to cut some.
Yeah, I can't really figure out what happens like with Joe Ingles all the time. It seems like he pops in and out of trade rumors like on an like a half year basis.
None of these other guys. I mean, that's the problem. Once you go down like past 10 million or so, all these guys are not going to risk it. They're just going to bet on themselves.
Yeah, they are.
Which Thomas Bryant would be interested, or like, I guess, no, they're not going to do it because they have Daniel Gafford now. Chris Boucher
is a good name. He didn't sign for a long term. He only signed a 2 year.
He did, yeah. No, his 2 years, 13.5.
Wow. Yeah,
but he's only earning 7 million this year. So again, like. He is the perfect type of guy to go bet on himself.
Yeah.
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 Maybe we're done. Maybe the free agent market, restricted free agents. Those are the big ones to keep an eye on from here, but maybe we've reached the end of extension mania.
Even so, like, in again, just the whole ideology of betting on yourself. So let's say Chris Boucher, who's going to be earning what, seven? No, hang on.
Yeah, seven flat almost.
Seven flat. All right, let's go from there. So what's the max that he could earn there? Again, I thought it was 175 because he would be under contract for 2 years. 175%.
He hits free agency, yeah, because they're signing him from early bird. But...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so if it's an extension, they're going off the base salary.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. Would you do that? Like, what is that? That's 6.5
for Boucher.
Yeah. So that's his base salary, right?
No, if I'm Boucher, I bet on myself.
Yeah. But listen. Let's just walk it through it here, because so his extension would kick in as the base year salary of his 6.5 million, right? So that's 100% of that. 120% of that. Correct.
I believe so. Or let me see. Is either way, like, even use the full seven. No, yeah, yes. Yeah. So it's his base salary is 7.2, seven, just over 7 million this year.
Yeah, yeah. But if he was to assign an extension, that would be off the base salary and not the 2021-2022 salary. Correct. This is getting real nerdy, folks. I apologize.
It'd be off his upcoming season salary.
All right, so that's seven.
Yeah, so 1.2.
Right.
Is his starting salary would be $8.4 million in the 22-23 season.
Over 4 years, and that it would what's the?
I did the math right. It'd be 37.7 million.
Over 4 years.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Although, okay.
That might not even be right. That's the most it could be, but I don't even know if they have early bird on him. So,
right. Okay, that's a fair one. Like, I understand he would be betting on himself for that money, but even so, I mean, look at what we're discussing. That's still a wildly, I mean, large contract for someone who was on a Exhibit 10 contract back in 2018.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't blame him if he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm what is he, like 28? Like, I'm just going to sign for what I can right now, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, we will see. But I think it's a good place for us to wrap up because my computer's about to die. So thank you for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. We will be back later this week with a very special guest. We are very excited about this one, so please check that out as well.
Yes.
In the meantime, stay safe, and Mort, have a good one.
You too, man, and I promise it'll be a little less geeky next time.
Yeah, hopefully.